What if everything you've been told about fascism and its relationship to American politics is completely backward? This is the explosive premise of The Big Lie, which argues that the political left in America has masterfully executed history's greatest psychological operation. While loudly condemning fascism and Nazism, progressives have actually been employing the very tactics they claim to oppose. This isn't just provocative rhetoric, it's a calculated strategy of political transference, accusing opponents of the very sins you're committing. When Democrats label Republicans as fascists, they're not merely exaggerating, they're deliberately flipping reality to preemptively deflect similar accusations that might be leveled against them. This inversion creates a powerful defensive shield. How could anyone making such forceful accusations be guilty of the very thing they condemn? Contrary to conventional wisdom, fascism emerged not from right-wing conservatism, but from a crisis within socialism. When Marx's predictions failed to materialize, workers in capitalist countries were becoming more prosperous, not more impoverished. Marxism split into two branches, Leninism and fascism. Giovanni Gentile, fascism's intellectual architect, was a lifelong socialist who viewed fascism as modified socialism, uniting communities through national rather than class consciousness. Mussolini himself was one of the world's best-known Marxists before founding the fascist movement. Even Hitler's party was explicitly named the National Socialist German Workers' Party. The Nazi Party's 25-point program included nationalization of corporations, government control of banking, land seizure, profit sharing, and universal free health care and education, policies that resemble modern progressive platforms more than conservative agendas. How did fascism become associated with the right? After World War II, as progressives consolidated academic dominance, they deliberately rewrote history, reclassifying fascism as right-wing, despite both movements' self-identification as socialist. American racial policies directly inspired Nazi Germany's legal framework for persecution. When drafting the Nuremberg Laws in 1934, Nazi officials explicitly referenced Jim Crow segregation laws from Mississippi and Virginia as successful models. They admired America's race-based immigration quotas and anti-miscegenation laws, though ironically found America's one-drop rule too extreme, instead requiring three Jewish grandparents to classify someone as Jewish. Hitler specifically modeled his plans to displace Slavs on America's treatment of Native Americans, citing the Indian Removal Act and Trail of Tears. His General Plan Ost aimed to deport, kill, assimilate, or enslave 30 to 45 million Eastern Europeans, drawing inspiration from the American reservation system. These segregation policies were specifically Democratic Party initiatives, passed by Democratic legislatures, signed by Democratic governors, and enforced by Democratic officials. For three decades, the KKK effectively served as the domestic terrorist arm of the Democratic Party, with prominent Democratic politicians openly embracing Klan support. The Nazis' horrific sterilization programs weren't original. They got these ideas from American progressives. Indiana passed the first forced sterilization law in 1907, and within 30 years, 26 other states followed, ultimately sterilizing 65,000 Americans against their will. California led the nation with over 20,000 forced sterilizations, targeting primarily minorities, the poor, and the mentally ill. Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood's founder, emerged as one of eugenics' most prominent advocates. She proposed that no woman shall have the legal right to bear a child without a permit, and called for sterilization of mental or moral degenerates. A blatant racist, she spoke to the KKK and established a Negro Project, writing that, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population." Hitler studied American eugenics laws with great interest and praised American immigration restrictions in Mein Kampf. American eugenicists proudly embraced Hitler's adoption of their ideas, with Charles Goethe writing that American thought had tremendously stimulated the Nazi program. After World War II, when eugenics became associated with Nazi atrocities, progressives rebranded these efforts first as population control and later as pro-choice. Franklin D. Roosevelt functioned like Mussolini, acting as a national boss constrained only by constitutional limitations. The admiration between American progressives and European fascists was mutual. Nazi newspapers praised FDR's dictatorial recovery measures and strong national socialism, while Hitler himself expressed sympathy for Mr. Roosevelt because he marches straight toward his objectives over Congress, lobbies, and bureaucracy. FDR's National Recovery Act essentially ended free market economics by empowering government to establish industry coalitions that set production targets, wages, prices, and working hours. Upon seeing the NRA, Mussolini remarked, "Ecco un dittatore, behold a dictator." The NRA's Blue Eagle campaign pressured businesses through public shaming and boycotts, similar to fascist economic control methods. FDR's collaboration with Southern racists exceeded political necessity. Despite having executive authority, he continued segregation in federal government. His Federal Housing Authority promoted segregated housing through redlining policies. Most notoriously, FDR signed Executive Order 9066, authorizing the internment of more than 120,000 Japanese Americans in what he himself called concentration camps. Today's progressive movement employs fascist tactics they claim to oppose. The most obvious parallel is using intimidation and violence to silence opposition. Anti-Trump protests have turned violent, with protesters throwing rocks and incendiary devices until police declared riots. Left-wing writers justify this violence, arguing that fascists can only be stopped by violent insurrection, and that conservative policies constitute violence, thus warranting forceful resistance. These tactics mirror the Nazi doctrine of Gleichschaltung, a form of political uniformity and social control representing the original political correctness. While Nazis used state power and street violence, they considered self-coordination, Selbstgleichschaltung, most successful, when individuals and institutions voluntarily aligned with the prevailing ideology. Today's American left employs similar pressure through social media campaigns, boycotts, and professional ostracism to enforce compliance. The Frankfurt School scholars, particularly Herbert Marcuse, provided the intellectual foundation for the left's current intolerance. In his 1965 essay, Repressive Tolerance, Marcuse advocated for systematic withdrawal of tolerance toward regressive opinions and called for intolerance against movements from the right and toleration of movements from the left. This framework now appears in campus speech codes, social media censorship, and corporate policies. The coordinated assault on Trump represents more than mere political opposition. It constitutes a fascist coup by unelected powers attempting to overturn election results they disapprove of. To counter left-wing fascism, we must restore government to constitutional limitations by dismantling the administrative state, returning federal authority to states, appointing committed constitutionalist judges, and breaking the left's information monopoly through alternative media and educational institutions. We must remember that conservatives have historically been the true anti-fascists, ending slavery through the Civil War, fighting segregation, shutting down the KKK through federal prosecution, and opposing eugenics programs championed by progressives. This proud legacy of opposing authoritarianism can continue if we recognize today's threat and act decisively. The stories we tell about our past profoundly shape our present and future. By understanding how progressive historians have systematically rewritten American history to obscure their movement's darker aspects, we can begin to reclaim the narrative. The struggle isn't just about politics, it's about who we are as a nation and what values truly represent the American tradition. Only by confronting these uncomfortable truths can we prevent history's darkest chapters from repeating themselves under new banners and noble-sounding slogans.